Wouldn't it be wonderful, and this has nothing to do with communion, if our church, what is our budget, Alan? Okay. What would you do if you had a $90 million budget for our church? $90 million. Yearly budget. What would you do? All right, you now know where I'm going. First, now you know why I'm ashamed to be a preacher. On Wednesday night, if you were with us on Wednesday night, you found out that Naaman the Aramean, the Syrian, was healed of leprosy by Elisha. And Gehazi wanted money for it. Gehazi was Elisha's servant. And Elisha said, "We don't want money. God doesn't do these things for money." So Gehazi went, you remember that story on Wednesday night, and asked for 2 talents of silver. He snuck out and asked Naaman the Syrian, 2 talents of silver and several nice suits. That's the prosperity gospel. And you know what God did on Wednesday night? You saw what God did. You turned God's house and the business of the gospel into money, and Gehazi was struck with what? Leprosy. That's God's way of saying, do not mix my preaching and my gospel with money. That's why I'm ashamed to be a preacher. What if we had a $90 million budget? What would you do as a church? Well, there's this one church, has a $90 million budget. They spend $31 million on their weekly services and programs. In other words, their Sunday, Wednesday night, whatever they do, they spend $31.7 million on their weekly services and programs. Does it cost us that much to hold a worship service here? How much does it cost us, Alan, to hold a worship service on Sunday? Well, no, it costs them 31.7. Then they have what's called a Night of Hope events, 6.7 million. The TV ministry costs 25.1 million. The general and administrative, 11.5. Woo, glory. That's the salaries or more. I don't know where that is. To make money, it costs money. $12 million to raise money. Here's how much they spent on evangelism to reach people for Jesus. Are you ready? $1.2 million. Out of a $90 million budget, proclaiming the gospel, outreach, evangelism, $1.2 million a year. That's Joel Osteen's church, Lakewood. What would you do with $90 million? I'll tell you one thing. You'd think that a church would spend at least half in evangelism to reach people for Jesus. Why, I'm ashamed to be a preacher. Then you got this guy named Jesse Duplantis. Another reason why I'm ashamed to be a preacher. Jesse said, God told him that Jesse, this is the message. I don't get those messages from God. I guess I use an iPhone and he's got a special some Samsung. I don't know. But God said, Jesse, if you want to be where I am, you need a new jet. That's literally the quote from Jesse.
Why he picked 90, I don't understand. It's obsolete.
In Louisiana, by the way, you want to really go crazy before we come to communion? Just take your cell phone and Google Faith Healers Homes, Prosperity Gospel Homes. You ain't seen anything until you've seen the homes these bozos have. We're talking 10,000 square feet mansions worth 25 million and more. And Jesse said, God told him, Jesse, if you want to be where I am, I guess up in the sky. Of course, let's ignore that God is everywhere. You need to purchase a $54 million jet. And you know who's going to give him that? Really bothers the life out of me. It's going to be a little old widow who gets $400 Social Security a month, who will give her last $25 so that that bozo can live in a $10 million mansion, fly a $54 million plane. And then people that aren't churched see these guys and they think all preachers, this is what they do. And Jesus kept preaching, you cannot serve God and mammon, money. And the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. And Jesse Duplantis is saying, well, Jesus wouldn't be riding a donkey if he was alive today. And this is what people think of Christians. So I do that to sober you up that, well, we wish we had a $90 million budget. But I'll tell you something, 1/90th of that budget is for evangelism at Lakewood Church. That's sad. This morning's communion. Often I try to find something that honors what we do. And so, if you turn to Matthew chapter 26, Matthew chapter 26, starting with verse 17, today I'd like to remind us of what communion is. Communion actually is a memorial. It's a remembrance of what Jesus did, and it comes from the Last Supper that Jesus ever celebrated. The Last Supper, though, didn't just happen by accident. Communion, the Last Supper, actually stems from the Jewish celebration of Passover. So when we celebrate communion this morning, we're actually celebrating its roots in Passover. Now on the first day of unleavened bread, that is all the Jewish preparation for Passover, the disciples came to Jesus saying, where do you want us to prepare for you to eat the Passover? There is where communion came from. This is the celebration where this stems. Passover, Pesach, it's called. By the way, Jesus had celebrated 33 Passovers. From his infancy to the night on which he was betrayed, this is what the disciples and Jesus always had done. The Feast of Unleavened Bread started, and they would prepare to celebrate the Passover. And the disciples were told, go into the city, find a certain man. Say to him, the teacher says, my time is at hand. I am to keep the Passover at your house with my disciples. Whose house was this? We don't know. And the disciples did as they had directed them, and they prepared the Passover. Now when evening had come, and they had the Passover meal at evening. Why? I always like holiday meals at noon. Why did they choose evening? There's an answer. And as they were eating, and by the way, guess what you're going to get this morning? something that we call grape juice. And some oyster cracker. This is a meal. Actually, this came from a time in which if we did it the way the biblical thing should be, we should be over in the Bay Areas eating a meal in the evening with real wine and lamb. That's what Jesus had. The Jews in that day didn't have meat much. Mostly fish and vegetables. The only time they really got meat was during Passover, and it was lamb. I never liked... Did you ever have lamb? Anybody ever have lamb? Never liked... And I can't think of herding a lamb. Just can't go there. And so Jesus instituted the Passover, and it says in verse 23, "He who dipped his hand with me in the bowl is the one who will betray me." They had a bowl of wine. And they would take their unleavened bread and dip it in the wine. I told you about my grandmother. She never would drink wine, but we would take her to this steakhouse where they would use half Franzi of Burgundy and half white wine vinegar. She didn't know it. We didn't tell her. I had the greatest delight as she took her bread and sopped up the vinegar from her salad plate. And so this is Jesus taking his matzah, dipping it in wine, and handing it to Judas. And when he did that, in the Jewish Passover, they always dipped the sop to the special guest. They'd have a special guest, an honored guest. Guess who was the honored guest that night? You don't think Jesus knew he'd betray him? Jesus appealed to Judas to the very end not to do what he was about to do. Verse 26. "And while they were eating," not oyster crackers and a little bit of something that tastes like grape juice, "Jesus took some unleavened bread and offered a prayer. He broke it, gave it to his disciples, and said, 'Take, eat, this is my body.'" Jesus never said that before at any Passover. By the way, there were four, by this time, there was a Jewish tradition of four cups of wine. And they would pass around four cups of wine, and at every time they would do it, they would all drink from the same cup. I'd have a problem. Nothing personal. They would all drink from this. I hope the alcohol would kill it. You know what I mean? And they would have a prayer. There were four cups at a Passover Seder. It was a celebration. What were they celebrating? That God delivered them from slavery in Egypt. So they developed four cups of wine. And at the third cup, this is what Jesus said. Not, there were already two cups of wine that aren't mentioned here. He said something that they would have wondered, "What in the wide world are you talking about?" He said to them, "This is my body which is broken for you." He's preparing them for his death. "Drink," and then he gave them that third cup in verse 27. "Drink it, all of you, for this is my blood of the new covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sin." And then look what Jesus said. "I tell you, I will not drink of the fruit of the vine from now until the day when I drink it with you in my Father's kingdom." I got news for you who are teetotalers and don't drink wine. In the future, when Jesus comes back, we won't need to eat and drink. We will have glorified bodies. But we're going to sit down and have the most wondrous meal that'll be with Jesus. You won't have to suffer with a preacher like me. You'll have Jesus there. He will have his angels. I can't imagine it, but the angels will serve the most wondrous meal. The wine will be unlike anything you've ever tasted. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob will be there. And all the followers of Jesus will celebrate in the millennial kingdom. And all of this goes back. Hold your finger in Matthew and go back to Exodus chapter 12. All of this goes back to the original Passover. For Passover means when I see the blood, I will pass over you. The last judgment on Egypt was to be the death of the firstborn because they had enslaved God's people. And when Moses sat down for the first Passover in Exodus 12:21, he told them, go take for yourselves lambs and slay it. Take hyssop, dip it in the blood which is in the basin, and apply some of that blood to your doorposts. For tonight the Lord will pass through to smite the Egyptians, and when he sees the blood on the lintel of your doorpost, the Lord will pass over the door and will not allow the destroyer to smite you. Listen to me, there is such theology in here. If any Jewish person, Hebrew actually, that's an archaic term, Jewish, its Hebrew person did not do this, the angel would have killed their child. It was an act of faith by sprinkling the blood. Can you imagine being that? Go ahead, put blood on your... What are you talking about, Moses? But they did it. And Passover and communion are teaching us that when God sees the sacrifice of Jesus Christ and your trust in what Jesus did, the angel of destruction passes over you and does not come near you because of what Jesus did. So it goes all the way back to there.